Welcome to The Breakdown. I'm Chuck Pierce.
And I'm Portia Scott Griffith.
And on our panel today, we have Obama denier and author of the book, Well, I Never Met Him, Alan Jarvis, transracial fracking misunderstander, Sally Rosenberg, Wiccan priestess and director of the documentary I Hate the Troops, Imani Fokolo, Ken Simpson, a Kentucky dog groomer who used a religious liberty law to refuse service to a gay dog, and Rex, a gay dog. Welcome to the program. TBTL.
Hey, welcome back to Personal Space. I'm your host, Philip Jacobs, and let me tell you, I care about my personal space. Now, why don't we step up here and everybody get stepped up, and let's get some stepped up personal space up in this place.
Don't bully me, all right? I can't take it. I was cyberbullied within an inch of my life last night.
Let's face it, some people have a way with words. Other people, not have a way, I guess.
Usually I don't think my brother's that much funny, but I gotta give him some credit for that one. That's a pretty good spoof.
www.this and www.that. Let's www.explain it.
All right, hello, good morning, and welcome everybody to a Wednesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
We do not have time for this kind of silliness.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Hello, everyone.
Coming to you from the offices of Walsh, Walsh & Doormat in the sunny, sunny Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. I don't know what to do with all this vitamin D that's coursing through my body. Woke up this morning in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, and it was like, I don't know, 6:45 in the morning, and the sun was already out. It was light, it was bright, and my body just said, yes, queen, let's do this. And then I told my body to stop saying that because it's not a good look for a 43-year-old middle-aged dad type. Anyway, very excited to be here in Seattle and bringing you episode 3,101 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
A guy in Kentucky has won a long legal battle to put I'm God on his vanity license plate.
When you got God, you got a friend, and that friend is you.
This is a great article that really just goes into all of the small skirmishes that are being fought all over the country between people who want dingus vanity plates and the states that would like to stop them. So we will get into that. Also, right here in our own backyard, there is a problem involving the proliferation of eagles and their love of garbage.
Let the eagles soar.
Speaking of garbage, well, we've got a garbage anxiety story from yours truly. I got real cocky last week. I mentioned that I pulled off the rare double cart roll down to the street right before the garbage people got there. Well, I played and I lost this week. I'll tell you what happened with that, too. And, of course, we have emails and V-mails. And we have this guy, the longest-running Cobra of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships, their grace, their splendor. He's also known as God's only true voice of comedy.
Ooh, la, la.
He's Andrew Walsh. He's joining me right now from across this table. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, Luke. I'm excited to hear about your garbage anxiety.
I mean, I told the whole story there.
That's the whole thing.
The whole thing is that last week I got up in the morning and I took the can down there and got just barely ahead of the garbage folk. And so I got cocky. And last night I did not feel, it was very cold, did not feel like bundling up and wheeling the garbage down the long driveway. And so this morning I thought, oh, I'll just do that before I leave for Seattle. And I got down there, wheeled it down, very full, and just, I don't know why, to double check or something, the neighbor's garbage cans are all out there, you know, they're all kind of side by side. And I was concerned because there was no garbage bulging out of any of the other cans. So I opened the lid, and that one was empty. And I thought, well, maybe that's just been there the whole week. And then I opened the next one, and it was empty. But I still didn't want to believe it. So when I left, I drove all the way down my block. I stopped at a different garbage can, which is a weird look. I pulled over in a rented Dodge Journey.
Look at the Bellingham Herald. Is there a garbage peeper on the loose?
God, what a kink that would be.
Oh, my God.
This man loves cans and looking in them. So I peep in my, like, I don't even know these neighbors. This is like six or seven houses down. I peep in their can, and I was very sad to see that their can was completely empty. So it means that now, I guess that thing's going to have to sit out there for a week.
Can I share a story with you? This is not my story, but this is a beautiful story. This is from...
I'll be the judge of that.
Listener Sarah, who posted this
Pa, it's just beautiful.
Posted this on the Slack page. She posted this earlier this morning, and I saw it. I'm lying in bed, and I just heard the recycling truck, and I realized my bins weren't out there. I ran them outside, but I'm not 100% sure if they're circling back to my side of the street or if they already did both sides of the street. We need terms for these different versions of hashtag garbage anxiety. Mm. Well, that gave me garbage anxiety.
What was the listener name?
Sarah.
By the way, Sarah, full marks for using lying properly instead of laying. To lay is to place something. I am laying this sound machine box on this table. I've laid it down. Lying is when you are in repose as a person.
What if she means she's sitting on her bed but making this story up? Mm. That's a different kind of lying.
But still lying.
Or sitting. What if she's sitting but lying?
Neither one of them would be laying. None of them would be laying. That's all I'm trying to
That's
say.
That's the important thing. Anyway... I saw this and I was like, well, what's the latest? And I just opened it right now. Mm. Ladies and gentlemen, Sarah is okay. Update. They circled back.
Oh, man.
The recycling has been taken care of. I think we're starting with a clean slate.
I don't have such a happy story from Bellingham. It'll be all right, though. I'll figure it out this weekend when I get back home. I'm also feeling encouraged because, Andrew, thank you very much for setting me up with some coffee this morning. Mm-hmm. And laying out some Splenda, which is exactly what you did when you placed it on the countertop for me. And the Splenda, I noticed, have these affirmations. You got this.
Oh.
Be your best today.
Oh,
and
you
I just
do
feel
got
like
this.
I feel like I do got this thanks to this packet of Splenda and this little bit of motivational marketing, branding.
And appropriately enough, you have the mug that says every day is trash day.
Every day is like trash day. Is that what that's a reference to?
Yeah, I believe so.
That's a Morrissey thing, except it's got a picture of an opossum.
An opossum, not a possum.
As we've learned
both
recently.
Both marsupials, different animals.
Yeah. I had a weird drive down here this morning because I saw this car on the freeway that had just a bunch of, in my opinion, BS, like Second Amendment stuff and don't tread on me and Trump whatnot. And that was probably around, I'll say, Marysville. So that's about halfway between Bellingham and Seattle. And I spent the rest of the drive just aloud having a conversation with the guy in that car to the point where I turned the radio down so I could properly do this.
Wow.
Like I'm listening to public radio in the Dodge Journey. And then it was like I just saw this stuff and I was like, how do I talk to this guy? Like how do I actually – if he and I were sitting at a bar next to each other or if we were out in the world and I were trying to – engage with him. How do we even begin to talk about why? Like he had that, I don't know if you guys know about this Oath Keeper thing.
Mm-mm.
They're like the 3%. A lot of these Oath Keeper people, mostly guys, were like in the military, but now they feel like it's their job. They're sort of like hyper militia'd out. Like they're ready to go, allegedly, if, you know, the Obamunists come for their guns.
Right.
They are ready to do it.
Or if their football team loses.
Yeah, and either the above, or if someone kneels during a football during the anthem, any of those important things. And I'll just say for the record, my money's on the U.S. military, like the actual military. Mm-hmm. Like, please, if you guys want to go Red Dawn on it and try to, like, you know, whatever, good luck. But I see that stuff, and it just riles me up so much, and I feel almost, to use an overused term, it really triggers me in this way, where I'm just, like, so mad, and then... So I had like a 40-minute conversation with this guy out loud in the car trying to explain. And he was in the conversation. He was like, it's all a bunch of BS.
Were you doing his voice?
My mind was thinking of his voice. My mind was
generating.
I wasn't,
you didn't do his voice.
No, it wasn't. Like I had,
did you have puppets?
I did, which is very unsafe
dangerous.
When you're driving. Yeah. No, but I would hear his voice and I would say, well, do you literally want to take this point by point? Let's do this. Like this is what's going on. Allowed inside
the
rental car.
I like the way you're having the imaginary conversation, but acting like he's the one pursuing this. Oh, you really want to do this, sir?
No. It wasn't.
You really want to do this?
No. But honestly, it wasn't that like threatening. Like, oh, you want to effing do this?
Right.
It was like, okay, well, listen, let's just. In fact, I was trying to be nice to him in this imaginary conversation. Like, I was basically gaming out a scenario. You know what I mean? Like a computer will run a scenario 10 million times to try to – I only had time to game it out once.
Okay.
But it was not like – I wasn't even trying to be a jerk to him. I was trying to understand, is there a way to have a conversation with somebody who's in that lifestyle where you have any kind of positive impact?
I had a kind of a real-life version of that recently when I got this text message on, it looks like, Monday evening. Hi, I'm Joe from Mike Bloomberg's campaign. With so much at stake, Americans deserve a Democratic candidate who can beat Donald Trump. Will you support Mike? I wrote back, possibly while drunk, not in a million goddamn years.
Wow. Wow. Shots, you know, fired.
I figured that's like sent out by a bot. No big deal. Uh-huh. They'll figure it out. Then the next day, 24 hours later, actually less, like, I don't know, 18 hours later. Do you mind if I ask what's holding you back? They wanted some details on why I'm not voting. I wrote back, his policies past and present and the fact that he bought himself into a race where more qualified candidates have been displaced. It's another step in the continuing erosion of our democracy.
Wow.
Have not heard back.
Whoa. Now, did you write the follow-up while stone sober?
I think so, yeah, because I was sitting here. It came in during the day.
Because I would say there is a difference in the tone of those two emails.
Not in a million goddamn years.
Yeah, that one feels like that more, someone's triggered.
Yeah, sailor. Like, yeah. I'm out on my boat.
I know. That is like, that is a bad feeling, though, when you, like, the sort of, kind of related, but not, but it happened not far from here. I've told this story on the show before, but one time I went to rent a car from, like, Enterprise, and I took a, like, a Lyft or an Uber to the location, which is about a half a mile from here, and it was just a madhouse. Like, something was broken about the computer system that organizes the cars being, you know, the rental cars being at the place where people are trying to get them. The whole waiting room was just full of sad people because it was a Friday. Everyone was trying to get out of town. And I got in there, and this poor kid working there is probably 25, totally overwhelmed. And the Uber or whatever it was still waiting for me outside. And I was so mad because they didn't have my car. And he was like, it's going to be 2 hours. I'm so sorry. And like, I went out and got into the...
Why is your Uber waiting for you?
Because I saw, sensed trouble. I was like, just...
Keep the car running.
Exactly. I was like, stay here. This could be a situation. Sure enough, it was. So I get back in the Uber, and now I'm calling Enterprise, the 1-800 number, to like try to get a new car, somehow figure something out. And it patches me through, and the guy goes, Enterprise, can I help you? And I'm like, yeah, I'm at this location in the U District, and this kid has no flipping idea what he's doing. It is just a mess in there. And he goes, yeah, I'm the kid in there.
I remember this.
It did
that
not.
That story never gets easier.
And he goes, I can see you outside. You're in an Uber, right? And I was like, I am so sorry, dude. I was like, but I guess at least I apologize. I was like, I am so sorry. I just, you know, and he was like, it's no problem. I get it. I can't even remember. I might have eventually just gotten the car from there, too. But it was so mortifying. That idea of when you're just kind of like letting someone have it, you think into the ether or into the void. But there's a person, you know. On the other end, now that Bloomberg person, I don't, you know, my heart doesn't really break for them. It's like, what kind of person is that?
So I wasn't attacking them. I was telling them specifically why I will never vote for him in a million goddamn years.
Yeah, like, right.
Yeah, I don't feel like I was being cruel to that person. In fact, I had another
interaction. If you were, let's just say, though, and I don't know your politics, I mean, I assume you're more of a Tulsi Gabbard guy.
Yeah, but let's just say through and through.
Let's just say that you're canvassing for a candidate.
Do you want to gab about Gabbard? Do you have 2 minutes to gab about Gabbard?
That's almost a reason to wish she was still in the race. Let's imagine that you were canvassing for Tulsi Gabbard, though, and you were like, hey, do you have a minute to gab about Gabbard? And the person said, not in a million bleeping years. Mm-hmm. It would be hard. I'm not saying you did the wrong thing, but I'm saying at that point, you as the person presenting this idea would probably feel a little bit personally attacked.
Yeah,
even though all that person is saying is, I don't support that candidate. And again, I'm totally not saying that you did, because I'm sure this Bloomberg person was being paid $400 an hour to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like everything about.
I actually do know for a fact that he's paying individual influencers $150 for an influence.
That could get me out of a couple jams. What's the minimum amount of Twitter followers you need? Sorry, suddenly my Twitter feed just becomes. Oddly pro Bloomberg.
I'd be fine. We can talk. We can gab about Bloomberg, although it doesn't have that same kind of.
We blab about Bloomberg or gab about Gabbard.
I like that. I'd write that down as a show title, except nobody will listen to the show.
Yeah, we are the last people that need to be like breaking down the Democratic field.
Exactly. In fact, speaking of kind of staying out of our lanes, I got to do a little plug here. We had a really fun show, and after these messages yesterday, we had a guest. We don't often have guests on, but this guy had written for Slate that he had watched 185 Bloomberg ads. Do you know that Bloomberg is spending $1 million a day just on Facebook alone, or at least did for a 2-week period?
I know that the TV ads are everywhere, mm-hmm. like everywhere. And I find it so funny that he's got this one, I'm sure there's many of them, where it's basically like if you were kind of half paying attention, you would think that Obama has endorsed him.
Yes, yes.
And it's like he's trying to pull a Patrick Dempsey from Can't Buy Me Love. He's trying to get the like hot chick to hang out with him so people will think they're a couple and then the other mm-hmm. people will mm-hmm. like be attracted to him.
Right.
But as we know, then eventually you do the anteater mating dance.
Right.
And then it all comes tumbling down.
Right, exactly, because Biden's there, and he's like, I saw that on PBS.
Exactly, he's going to get busted. So, but I have been seeing those ads.
Yeah, but he's really run the gamut. Like, he just has created, like, so many ads and so many social media ads that I don't see because, for some reason, I'm still not getting ads on Instagram, which is weird, and I'm not on Facebook, but there's just so much. And he's doing bizarre, like, kind of weird internet-y things to catch people's attention. He's doing the really kind of solemn ones, like the Super Bowl ad, and a lot of... We all agreed the best ones were when he just lets Trump beat himself up, you know, by just taking a bunch of clips of Trump being awful and putting him out there. But anyway, we had this writer on, Justin Peters. He was really funny.
So. What did he learn from watching all those ads?
Well, that's what I asked him because he had the headline, which of course he didn't write, was like something like, I watched all 185 and this is what I learned. And I was like, what did you learn other than he's buying the campaign? He's like, yeah, or buying his way into the campaign or buying his way into the election. He's like, yeah, that's basically what I learned. I mean, that's it. What he also learned is just like the spending. He is on target to spend before, I believe, Super Tuesday. He's on target to spend more money by far, exponentially more money than the DNC raised in 2019.
Wow.
All told. Yeah.
Well, we shall see if it works.
That got real boring. Sorry, but the show itself is fun.
Okay, good. Now, is that a new thing that you mean for you guys? Have you historically talked about political ads? Because you guys talk about TV ads.
Yeah.
And during, you know, depending on where we are in the election cycle, half of the TV ads are political ads. So then suddenly you're a political show, right?
I think maybe the last 4-year cycle, we had our friend Libby Dankman on,
and we
had some fun with political ads. But we don't talk about political ads all that often. Basically, we woke up on Tuesday, didn't have an idea for a show, saw this article, it was pretty funny, and thought, let's just have this guy on, make him do our work for
are
us.
You, so is that because you guys are trying to not... If you start talking about political ads, there's no way to then not just have it become about politics?
Yeah, especially with Veeves. I mean, we're both interested in it, but Veeves especially kind of burns hot when it comes to this stuff. So if we talk about this, we will end up talking a lot about politics. I don't think that... Honestly, though, Veeves and I were talking after the show yesterday, like... Despite us having a really good time with his guest, we will probably have lower numbers on that show because people will see that it's political. You'll hear a lot of Trump because we're playing Bloomberg ads that feature Trump. People listen to shows like this for like a kind of a break. So I wouldn't be surprised if our numbers are a little bit low. But Veeves and I still are like, Veeves is very strongly like she does not want to turn after these messages into a business at all. Like, we're proud when we have good download numbers.
That's always been my goal with TBTL.
Yeah,
and I would say so far it's been successful.
I have a note to our boss that you sent yesterday directed that at. No.
God bless our boss, honestly.
She's great.
God bless Lily.
I know.
Let's just do it. I won't get into the specifics, but like there was something that we just realized, an initiative that we were going to do that was just going to be too ambitious at this very moment because we're ramping up for the TBTL-a-thon. We have this really cool listener drive we're going to do, like exciting times here in TBTL town. But there was this one other thing that we couldn't do. I think you and I were both bracing a little bit because I emailed our boss and I just said, hey, we don't think this is going to work. And we were just expecting some amount of blowback or gentle pressure or like, well, can you please explain more why you're not going to do this thing we had agreed you're going to do? And she was just like, yeah, that totally makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, okay. What do I do with all this anxiety coursing through my body and veins that now has nowhere to go?
There might be some people we work with listening right now who's learning for the first time.
Maybe this is why I was arguing with that Trump supporter on I-5 today for 45 minutes.
Yeah, because just you have the power of persuasion.
Just excess. No, just like all this, what cortisol, what stress hormone is that that's just filling my body? Anyway, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about this Eagles at the Dump story, and also this guy in Kentucky with his vanity plates, plus emails and V-mails. It's all coming up here on TBTL. Is this like, is early REM that I don't know about?
It is. It's a song called Pretty Persuasion. Ah. I was just thinking about you persuading people all over the place.
Yeah.
One imaginary voter at a time.
Yeah.
One real life boss at a time.
One imaginary conversation. I guess if I have to pick between converting this rando on I-5 or our boss to come over to my side of a particular argument, I guess I got the right one.
I do think our boss is still voting for Trump, though. I don't know what to tell
you. I don't know. I've been gabbing about Gabbard to her. Are you having the same experience? I just like looked out the window here at the blue sky above the house next to your guys' house, and it's just like it honestly just fills me with, you know, just joy. Like, I'm honest, I think I've been in a sort of measurably better mood the last 3 days. Even though the funny part is I've been the last like 2 weekends I was in Los Angeles and Las Vegas. It's not even like I'm not getting sunshine, but sunshine happening in the place where I'm living my life. I don't know. I feel revived by the weather.
You know what's striking me more? We've discussed many times on the show that I don't think I'm quite as bummed out by rainy weather or gray skies as you are. Of course, we're getting pretty late into the winter now for this time of year, so it starts to wear on even people like me who grew up in Cleveland. But I will say the thing that's really striking me is the fact that it's getting lighter earlier. I think I mentioned this to you off air yesterday, that I felt awake a lot longer yesterday than I really was, just by the very nature of it being light outside longer while I was awake, if that makes any sense. And not to beat a dead, not to feed a fed horse here.
Thank you.
Yes. But I am, I mean, I don't know why, and again, I don't even know much about what's going on with the Mariners right now, but it's all very much tied into, I just want baseball season to begin.
Yeah. Oh, hey, by the way, hanging out with us is our friend Katie Sewell from the Bittersweet Life podcast. Hi, Katie. How's it going? Have you noticed that the light is more plentiful this time of year? Do you, like, you've lived all over. Does, like, the winters around here get to you?
No, only because I've lived here for so long.
You've just resigned.
But so is Luke. Luke,
for me, it's
here.
Going. It's like the longer I'm here, the less tall, the less I can tolerate it, which is weird.
That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, I moved here when I was a fifth grader.
Okay.
And I really have gotten to the point where I can't handle snow, so I feel a little trapped. Huh. So I can be here. I can be in Rome. You know, anywhere that doesn't, I don't have to shovel. But I'll put up with dark skies for months to not have to shovel.
Wow. I feel like snow is so fun. Gets back to the light thing. When it snows, like when we were going to Minnesota for work, I noticed when the plane was landing in Minneapolis, it was actually like nighttime, but it was still actually bright because all of the light bouncing off the snow. And I took that as a plus. So, but you hate snow that much. You hate shoveling.
Well, it's actually probably more driving. Like, I find I have no ability to drive in the snow because I'm from Minnesota, but I've been here since, you know, I was a kid.
So it's atrophied, whatever.
So it means
when
I
you're
just
four,
can't do
you
anything.
Can drive in the snow.
Yeah.
Right. But so I just feel trapped when it snows. I think that's more the problem.
Yeah. And Luke, I got to say, like, no offense, but that's really spoken like somebody who only sees snow every now and then in some magical moment.
Yes,
like living
fair.
In the snow
fair.
Is just so much different.
Fair.
And like when I was in St. Paul this time, I got trapped, literally got stuck in St. Paul because a big snowstorm came. And even that for me, I really enjoyed it because I knew it was like a vacation from my real life.
You were looking for some Andy time at the St. Paul Hotel.
Got some Andy time at the St. Paul Hotel. Had a great bowl of onion soup. Yeah, I eat cheese in that context. Leave me alone.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. The rules don't make sense.
That's TBTL breaking news because I
feel
like
arbitrary, my friend.
Yeah, because you don't like that melty cheese, but that's about
No, I do. I will eat melty. I will eat whitish melty cheese, like a mozzarella and now
you like
a
pizza.
Swiss.
What's the – I'm sure you've explained it to me over 1,000 times, but what is the – so you'll eat cheese that's in onion soup. You'll eat cheese on pizza, melty white, Swiss, whatever. What is the cheese that's you're a hard no on, and what kind of
temperature? I don't even know cheeses. Well, I won't eat any cheese that's not fully melted. Even coagulated cheese and anything other than pizza I don't like. So if I order a Reuben and I say, yeah, go ahead and put the melted Swiss cheese on it, that's fine if it comes out and it's totally melted.
Okay.
If I bring that thing home, like half of it home, and I put it in the fridge, and then that once melted cheese basically becomes like a hardened white cheese again, I will not eat it.
So like
unless I remelt it.
Like a sliced piece of cheddar cheese, you can buy that
would
block
never.
Of pre-sliced. That would be a bad,
would never.
Very
don't know
bad
why.
Textural experience
yeah.
for you.
Don't
is
know
it
why.
More the taste or the
I
texture?
I mean, I do know why. It's just because my sister messed me up as a kid. She what? Was just a picky eater, and so I took a lot of cues from her as a very young person. And I think that I just got in my head that it's a really, really gross thing. And so now I have a gag reflex.
Huh. Mm-hmm. I find that so interesting because it just seems like it wouldn't stick with you that long.
Well, it's funny. Like, I eat a lot of things now. I mean, I'd be like a I literally can't think of one clever celebrity chef right here right now.
How about Gordon Ramsay?
Your buddy.
My buddy.
Your best friend.
No, I do. Wolfgang Puck is the guy.
Oh, that's right.
That's the guy that I know.
Friend. Yeah.
Okay. And for the record, yeah. Wolfgang Puck is like the nice version of Gordon mm-hmm. Ramsay.
Oh, that's
he
right.
just goes
he's
around being nice
guy.
To people. Gordon yeah. Ramsay goes around. And what
he's the one who puts two pieces of bread on the side of somebody's face in a meme and says, you're a stupid sandwich.
I didn't know that, but it seems highly
does
possible.
Does that ring a bell to anybody
that
in the
seems
room? No?
Very possible.
No? Okay,
yeah, that's his brand. In fact, when I was in Vegas last weekend, there was like Gordon Ramsay, Hell's Kitchen restaurant. And we were speculating, like, do they just yell at you? Like, what's the concept?
Right.
Of it's because that TV show is all about him yelling at people that are trying to cook.
Mm. I'm looking up Gordon Ramsay meme sandwich.
Do you watch any of those cooking shows, Katie?
I used to. A lot, yeah.
Top Chef?
Well, I don't actually have cable when I'm at home, but anytime I'm in a hotel room, I can't stop.
Yes.
It's Chopped. I feel like all they play is Chopped.
Yes. Like, this is something that we've talked about on the show before. Hotel watching, hotel TV is the greatest because it's not a reflection on who you really are as a person. You know what I mean?
You hope not, yeah.
I mean, it probably is, but you tell yourself, oh, I can watch any old shit because this is not my real life. I'm just in this room. Like, you'll spend hours watching, you know, some lame thing because, like, if you were watching it at your house, then it'd be a really say something about you.
Right, yeah. If you watch a marathon of My 600-Pound Life at home, like, you're really wasting your life.
I used to watch that show a lot, and now I've stopped because the frustration is, and I want to talk about this in a way that doesn't sound like I'm shaming anyone, but like my 600-pound life, the arc used to be someone's really, really heavy. They go get this surgery, and then you're kind of rooting for them to get as healthy as possible, whatever that looks like. People can't even qualify for the surgery anymore because so what will happen is most of the episodes are someone is tremendously overweight. They go, Dr. Nazarden says, I'll give you the surgery, but you have to just like abide by this certain like rules of like eating these calories and whatever. And then the whole show is them just not even getting to that threshold. And then it just ends, and it always ends with some. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm shaming anyone, but it always ends with this person who has not even had the procedure that the show is ostensibly about going, but I'm feeling better than ever, and I'm ready to achieve my goals. And I'm just like, that does not.
Were they reading off a Splenda packet?
I mean, it's also clear with that show that there's a lot of, they write these lines, you know, to try to move the plot along. Mm-hmm. They'll write a lot of stuff for the people that are the focus of the show. Yeah. And you can tell when they're reading it because they may not be the best at like delivering that line naturalistically.
Right.
But I'm always like, look, I don't feel like the future is bright for you if we went this whole 2 hours and you never got the thing you were moved to Houston to get.
Those shows, I find shows like that just generally uncomfortable. I never watch any of them. But one that, I mean, this is a pretty extreme one, I think. I got literally pretty upset one time. Not even angry. I was sort of angry. But I was in a hotel room with Genevieve, and she was watching Botched. Are you familiar with Botched?
Oh, yes. This plastic surgery has
gone
awry.
Very upsetting. And I kept saying, change it. I mean, we didn't, you know, if I really said, Genevieve, I cannot handle it anymore, please change it. I'm sure she would have. But, like, I was trying to roll with it, but I was getting very upset.
Well,
it's a very upsetting show.
Oh, I mean, 100% the most upsetting one. And Dr. Pimple Popper.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to guess. Yeah.
You're when you're right, you're right. So,
it's so disgusting.
It is. And also, I mean, not only is it disgusting, but it's, truthfully, it's not even pimples.
Yeah.
Because, unless this was like a real situation, you wouldn't really go to a doctor to have a pimple popped. It's and I don't, like, even talking about it almost raises a gag reflex in me, so I won't. But it's other things, you know what I mean? It's other sort of maladies that she's dealing with, and it just involves her removing various problems from people's skin, but it's not – it's very rarely a pimple. No one just comes in and goes, I got this blackhead on the side of my nose I can't deal with. It's like – it's a whole other category of stuff.
Did this start as an online thing?
Yes,
it started as a YouTube channel?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I mean, it is – I will tell you this. It is – it's gross, but it is very satisfying when whatever the thing that's going on. I would watch a show that was just called Dr. Plastic Remover, where they just pulled the plastic cover off of microwaves that have had it on there for like 3 years. So it's just pristine. Anytime I see any of that I mean, the listeners know this about me. In fact, listeners will tweet at me and email me when they have like a beautiful moment of finding something has had like a plastic sheet on it and that they didn't know about.
There's a whole channel dedicated to it on our Slack page, just people peeling things
it's
off.
It's so great.
Like, maybe this is the show that you produce. Don't you create a show on TLC called Dr. Peeler?
Dr. Plastic Peeler.
Dr. Feeler Peeler.
Whoa.
Nope.
Where's my buzzer? Here we go.
Sorry. Right. Hey, I was just throwing ideas out there. By the way, this I'm going to try playing this meme that I was talking about, this Ramsay thing. It's a GIF that I've seen a bunch of times where he is holding two pieces of bread to, I would assume, some sort of apprentice's face. I emailed it to you, Luke.
Mm-hmm.
And he's screaming in her face, "What are you?" And she's saying, "I'm an idiot sandwich." He's holding the pieces of bread up to her ears. Do we even want to hear what the actual
sound
is? Oh,
so that's real.
I think so.
James Corden, he can suck my...
Oh, no, it's not. This is... You know what? Is that... This was from a parody.
But that's, I'm sure that... Okay. But I'm sure that him... I'm sure that what he's actually yelling at her, "You're an idiot sandwich," is real. This is what happens when we play anything off of YouTube in the wild. It's like always somebody.
I'm finding a BuzzFeed about the origins of this. Before you worry that Ramsay has totally overstepped the mark, the footage is actually from a skit on the Late Late Show with James Corden. So good. Okay, I'm glad.
Well,
that
that's
I
actually
cleared
kind
that
of
up.
that's a little bit of a. That makes it a little better.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, although, honestly, I would be unsurprised to find out that that's a thing he's really doing.
Right, of course.
All right, let's do some top stories.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
You sent me this story, Andrew, and mentioned that it's full
really
of,
earning that associate producer credit.
Yes, you are. That is full of dazzling deets. I had seen the headline... but I guess I just felt like, yeah, you know, Eagles, they're a sort of a menace. And I didn't delve into the story, but I'm glad you actually read it and sent it to me, because there are a lot of like interesting little details in this. David Gutman writing. By the way, David Gutman's a great writer at the Seattle Times. I always like his stuff. So it turns out that King County has one landfill. It's called the Cedar Hills Regional Landfill. It's near Renton. 2,500 tons of garbage a day get stacked up there, which is about 700 football fields.
That's a different kind of garbage anxiety.
Yeah, you want to lose sleep at night.
Yeah.
Just think about 700 football fields of garbage a day at one landfill in King County.
Think about I do this anytime I'm at a Mariners game or whatnot. I just think about the garbage that is exiting this place.
Don't do it.
At midnight.
Well,
like,
I mean,
just one baseball game. Yeah. Imagine all of the stuff that is not recycled and thrown in the garbage bins.
If you think about all of the people on this planet, all the garbage that we're creating, people are like, can you please go back to talking about Bloomberg?
Yeah.
How did you find a more stressful topic? It's how is the whole planet not garbage at this
point?
Want
to garb about garbage? Sorry. When I find a good seam of content, I really like to tap into it.
It's anxiety producing to just think about all of this stuff that's, and I jokingly said, don't think about it, but that's actually its own mistake, because if we don't think about it, we're not going to actually maybe institute some policies that might change it. But anyway, 700 football. So welcome to not sleeping for the next week, people. 700 football fields of trash being dumped in this place a day. The problem is that, among other things, Eagles love trash. And because Eagles, people don't realize this, Eagles are scavengers. I mean, a lot of people don't, because they're so iconic in this country that they're not the brightest animal out there. In fact, this is one of the great things from this piece that David Gutman wrote, a quote from Benjamin Franklin about the bald eagle, which I had never read before. He is a bird of bad moral character. He does not get his living honestly. How did the eagle become our national symbol when Ben Franklin was like, yo, these birds suck?
I think I know that quote. I could be wrong, but I think that quote is because he wanted the turkey to be the national bird. Katie?
That's right, he did.
Look at that.
Yep. Whoa. Who knew? I also feel like the turkey would have been a bad...
I mean, the turkeys kind of shake you down, don't they? Like,
they scare me. I mean, I've been menaced by turkeys, and where we go for our work at APM, there's along the Mississippi River all these wild turkeys, and you try to go for a jog, and they will like flex.
And they will not get out of the way.
No.
Like, they're, if they're in the road, you're just going to wait.
Yeah, they're scary. Yeah. So you know what's funny about this story is that I actually had a borderline run-in with two huge bald eagles before I got into my Trump argument. I was coming around a bend, like just south of Bellingham, and one eagle had clearly picked up some, I don't know if it was roadkill or a rodent of some kind, and it was flapping. Those things are so enormous. And then another eagle was like, I don't know if it was chasing it or just trying to like get in on it, but these two eagles were flying like lower than windshield height. And I was like, eesh. Like if you hit one of those things, like your car is not going to be okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I did not get the insurance on this Dodge Journey.
And of course, I mean, it's funny to talk about bald eagles in this way because they were so protected for so long for most of our life. But now I think there's still protections around them, but their populations have bounced back like incredibly.
This is this is part of the article. They said bald eagles were once critically endangered. They've staged a remarkable comeback in the second half of the 20th century after the pesticide DDT was banned. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that was – I thought it was just like you're not allowed to shoot at them or something. But this also speaks to just like how effective environmental policy can be. I don't know why this show is getting so serious. But it's like if you think like none of that stuff matters, it's like when I was a little kid, I felt like I never saw a bald eagle like in the wild. Mm-hmm. Certainly not – in, you know, the Seattle area. And now they're everywhere. And it's like, well, what changed? Well, they stopped spraying crops with DDT.
Yeah. One specific change.
Like, it worked. I mean, maybe too well, because now there's a shitload of them.
Right.
But it just
I'd rather have these problems.
I know. Yeah. It just speaks to the kind of, like, that changes can actually have an impact. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what the DDT was doing to them?
Mm-mm.
Because they were eating, like, rodents and different things that were eating the grain. And their when they would lay eggs, one of the offsets of this, they would lay eggs and the eggs would be too thin, like the shells would be too thin, and so if they sat on it, they would just crush it.
Oh god, this is the saddest thing
also
I've ever heard.
Katie Sewell bringing the eagle back.
we've really
teed
maybe
this
should
up.
Just always be hanging out here just to fact check us.
Local eagle
stuff.
Expert Katie Sewell joins us from The Bittersweet Life. So the other person who emerges in this article is this guy named Justin Dayton, who I love. He's the guy that's been basically hired by the landfill to come in and try to scare the eagles off and birds in general. Mm-hmm. Because what's happening is that the eagles pick up the garbage, but sometimes the garbage is too heavy for them or they lose their grip. And so then as they're flying away with God knows what in their talons, they will drop the stuff and it will just land in a random person's yard, like garbage raining down from the sky into your yard.
I couldn't help but think this story is good for you because it involves two things that you love: garbage dumps,
yes,
and wildlife and animals and birds.
Yep. I've stopped eating eagle, by the way. It's part of my mission to save animals.
But turkey, no.
I don't eat turkey either.
Oh,
even
though
even though
I think turkeys are kind of scary, dumb animal. I don't have any love for them, but
it would be weird if the only meat
it was turkey
was or just something like an animal that you're mad at.
Yeah,
like you don't even enjoy meat anymore, but you just feel like you should do that out of revenge. But I was thinking about the story. You were tempted to maybe discontinue part of your garbage pickup service so you could go to the dump yourself and get rid of some things. And you were talking about that feeling you get, and I it stuck in my brain. I think you said something like that feeling of, will I just throw these old mini blinds and it'll land on somebody's one-wheeled scooter down there? Sure. And for some reason, your word picture implanted in my brain, and I'm reading this, and I'm picturing these bald eagles carrying your mini blinds or the one-wheeled scooter and just like dropping it in poor SOB's yard.
In fact, a guy showed up at a hearing with this like bag that just showed up in his backyard that a bird dropped. He's like very.
I thought I read this whole story. I don't remember the bag. What's in the bag?
Yeah, let me see if I can find this on the fly. I'm sure I'll hit upon it as I continue to work through this article. So this guy, by the way, Justin Dayton, is really interesting because he's getting paid. His company is getting paid $95,000 a year to try to. Oh, by the way, David Vogel, a landfill neighbor, said at a public meeting last year, holding a zipper top bag filled with waste he'd found in his yard.
Okay,
so I guess the bag wasn't drawn, but he was collecting up all the waste. Anyway, this Justin Dayton guy is interesting because he pulls up. David Gutman is riding along with him, and this Justin Dayton guy pulls up to the landfill. And the eagles and birds are just completely unfazed by the, like, tractors and, like, these scary, you know, machinery. But they see Justin Dayton, and they're like, peace!
Uh-huh.
Like, they're afraid of him specifically. Because he shows up, and he fires off all these weird, like, sound guns at them that that scare them off or cause them to sort of, like, go hover in the air and then maybe leave. He does all of these crazy weird things. He has a scarecrow that is made with his face on it because they now identify him as being a scary dude.
It's amazing that I mean, I knew that crows could recognize faces. We've talked about that on the show quite a bit. I didn't know that other birds can recognize human faces, though.
Yeah, apparently. But that's part of the thing, is that there's, like, different kinds of birds hanging out on this landfill, and he is legally allowed to mess with all of them but the eagles. He wants to be able to shoot off a different kind of, like, firework gun that will be effective at scaring the eagles.
I like it. Says he's got he pulls out what looks like a starter pistol from his pocket. He fires a few shots. There are screamers, which sound like a squealing duck, and a tail of flame. And there are bangers, which end with a small explosion. But he has to, because there are still some protections on these bald eagles, he has to get permission. By the way, this was a small little detail. If he gets permission from the federal government, the kind of permission he gets would allow him to actually kill the bald eagles, although King County says that they have no desire to do that.
That would be bad optics.
That's bad optics.
I would imagine. Yeah. I mean, you know, we revere these birds, even though they're just basically big, giant crows.
Yeah.
Maybe dumber versions of crows. What I like is the relationship between this guy named Scott Barden, who's assistant operations manager for King County Solid Waste, and this guy who's there to try to get rid of the birds. The Scott Barden guy goes, he tries a lot of stuff. Some of it works well, some of it doesn't. Like, I just like the idea this guy's, like, showing. He's, like, stuffing pool noodles
into
these cracks of this certain area to try to keep some birds from, like, nesting there. Like, I like the idea of just, like, one man versus these birds.
Know.
And he goes out to the dump every day, and he's like, today I'm going to try doing the lumbata in the middle of a trash pile. And then all the guys that work with them being like, that's not going to work.
That one's not going to work. He needs an apprentice. This is the perfect job for an apprentice, because he needs to be passing
this along to somebody. He's Don
Quixote,
and he needs a, what's it, Pancho Sansa, who's Quixote's little sidekick. I mean, he is on a – I mean, I don't know if he's tilting at windmills or not with this. I guess he's having some – impact. So the other thing he's doing, according to this article, is he basically goes and stands in the same pile of garbage, like, twice a week and counts the number of birds he can see and he's going to do that for a whole year to see if he's having a kind of measurable impact.
Wow, imagine what this guy's dreams are like.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I keep going back to Vegas, but, like, the first couple times I went to Las Vegas, I was so obsessed with playing blackjack. I would just sit at the blackjack table for 20 straight hours or something. And when I would close my eyes, like, trying to go to sleep, I would just see cards flipping over. That must be this guy with birds.
I get that with video games sometimes. If I get obsessed with a video game, I will have video game dreams for sure. This seems like a job that you would like, Luke. I'm not joking. I know that you care about wildlife and you don't want to hurt it, but it doesn't sound like he's interested in hurting these birds.
He's
trying to work with them.
Yeah.
You know? And I feel like this combines your love, like I said, of the dump, and you get to work with wildlife, you get to do the lumbata. Like, I think
all of
that
it,
you should
the forbidden dance.
Exactly. So I don't know, reach out.
The problem would be I would want to take stuff home from the dump. Because I don't think I'm a pack rat person.
Uh-huh.
But
little treasures.
It's hard not to, like, when you, I mean, you know, and actually sometimes if you go to the dump, there'll be signs that say no scavenging.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, all right, bud. I don't know. Sometimes you see, like, a seemingly perfectly good whatever, and you're just like, that's just, like, here for free. Why was someone throwing that out?
Down neighbors are going to be like, now we have a Burbank problem. He's riding
his
jalopy
they
over here.
They have to hire a different guy to come scare me off.
All the garbage is falling off the back of your Clampett-esque truck.
Yeah. I would be. But the weird part is, like, I'm not somebody who goes to, I don't go to secondhand shops a lot. I'm not into accumulating junk. But when I go to the dump, for some reason, I am, like, very, very intrigued by the stuff people are throwing out.
It's hard. Like, I think I used to be worse at this. But it's when you find something on the ground that's weird, it's like a little treasure. Mm-hmm. I came home from our trip to St. Paul, and what is sitting on our bookshelf, kind of propped up, but an old cymbal from a drum kit. Like, what is it? Zildjian?
A
Zildjian cymbal.
Whoa.
Propped up, but it's one edge of it is completely broken off, and it's pointy shards of metal.
Wow. Somebody must have really been just raging against the machine.
I know.
How sick of a drummer do you have to be to break a Zildjian cymbal?
I don't know, but also, why is this piece of garbage sitting on the bookshelf? I asked Genevieve. And she says, well, funny story about that. I was leaving work, and this thing was sitting on the ground, kind of on the sidewalk outside of our apartment. And I saw it, and I thought, that's kind of weird. And I almost picked it up, but then I decided I'm not going to carry around this broken cymbal
all day to work.
And
wow.
So I said, good decision on that part. She said, but then I came home after work that day and somebody had picked it up and propped it up on our mailbox and it was waiting for me when I got home. And I just sort of felt like I had to honor that in some way.
Is it still out there?
No, I finally threw it away.
What?
Yeah.
Did you get permission on that?
Yeah. No, I mean, we did it together. We lit some candles. Mm-hmm. We said some words and we threw it away. The edge of it was very dangerous, though. It was very sharp.
Hmm.
Anyway.
I feel like you could have, like, framed it or hung it. Mm-hmm. It could have been like the dinner gong or something.
The dinner gong. But that's quickly when you become like, you know, you get into kind of kooky old lady territory or like Harold and Maude territory or something.
It is a danger.
Yeah.
There is a house in the neighborhood when I walk Rudy that's just, it's, you know, definitely there's a hoarder situation going on. And I've over the, I don't know, 3 or 4 years that I've lived up there, just watched it progress. And it is, I mean, really genuinely a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting down to less and less space. The interesting part is that the woman who appears to live there drives a normal car, is if you were to see her at Hagen, you'd be like, seems like a normal gal in her 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've walked by when she pulls up, and then it's like she just opens her door and you can just see this whole thing going on. And it's like, man, you really never know with people, right?
Yeah. And it's a double-edged sword. Like, when I was younger, I'm worried if I was being too gendered when I said kooky old lady, but I do think of, like, that kind of character in stories. I think like Harold and Maude, if I'm remembering that correctly, or books that you read where there's a person who just kind of collects a bunch of these things and sees treasure everywhere she goes and collects it. And so you go into her house as a kid, and it's like a wonderland sort of. And that is – there's still a charm to that. But, again, where's that line that you cross when it stops being kind of quirky and cute and hoarderish?
Okay, speaking of quirky people, Ben Hart of Kentucky, he's 80 years old. He says, no one can prove that he is not God. And this is why, for years, he has been battling the state of Kentucky to get the license plate, I'm God, approved mm-hmm. for his car. And he's not, in fact, a Christian person. In fact, he's wearing a hat here that says, out of the closet atheist.
And he, 80 years old.
He is on a mission. He finally won in U.S. District Court the right to have this as his license plate. And in fact, the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet has to pay him more than $150,000 in legal fees.
Good.
That this guy has spent $150,000 of his own money to win the right to have this plate on his Jeep. His point is that he drives around Kentucky. I think he had one maybe in Ohio. He had maybe made one. So you can see the one that he's getting now that's legit, but he's also got one that he kind of homemade or something mm-hmm. on his car. Because what he does, he drives around Kentucky trying to provoke a conversation with people. And he carries a $100 bill in his pocket. He's been doing it for 20 years for anyone who can prove that he's not God, and he says, I've still got the $100. So people like come up to him at gas stations and ask him about the license plate, and then he will like say, this is the challenge. And he's uh-huh. I mean, the problem with that challenge is he's the arbiter
yeah.
of if they've convinced him or not. And if it was my $100, I'd be erring on the side of sure. you didn't convince me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think these rules, and every state's got different rules, right, for like what is allowed on a license plate. I understand it's kind of a free speech thing, but it's also a government-issued thing. But I'm God seems so innocuous to me.
I know. He applied to get I'm God plates in 2016 after moving to Kentucky. He'd had the same message for 12 years while he lived in Ohio. He's been an atheist since the age of 15, which would have been like 1925 or something for this guy. Like that was a
bold, earned his stripes.
It was a bold move. When he began questioning the story of Noah's Ark and what kind of God would drown every baby in the world. Good point, Ben
yes.
Hart. I mean, got to say. The New Hampshire Supreme Court had ruled in 2015 that the state had infringed on – this is a different vanity plate. In New Hampshire in 2014, the state infringed on someone's free speech when it rejected his application for a license plate that read, Cops Lie. Meanwhile, according to the website Medium, a Vermont woman has been fighting for years to keep her vanity plates. Shit happens. But it's not even shit happens because you don't get that many letters. It's, would you know, I mean, I've already kind of ruined this by telling you, if you just pulled up behind a car and it was S-H-T-H-P-N-S, it would be taking me a long time to figure out that was shit happens.
Maybe. I mean, is there a space where it's supposed to be?
I mean, you're not going to find it just like right there on it's about that part of the page. Look at the word shit happens. Would you just like
there's no space.
Asterisk
S-H-T-H.
Yeah, if it was like if you
there
were
was
allowed
a space,
to,
I would.
If you were allowed to do asterisk and it was like S-H asterisk T, then you're like now I know what's going on. This just looks like pins.
Yeah,
like it's not. And then there's like a few other that are listed in here. It's just like I don't know. I can't think of a vanity plate that I would actually want to have, like an any message other than maybe TBTL. Have we ever seen a TBTL vanity plate?
One, I think. Katie, do you have one?
A vanity plate
that says TBTL?
Oh no.
Okay. Mm. Just
curious. Wow. Okay. This interview is over.
Interesting.
I have one that's the bittersweet life.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's BTR.
I've been fighting the state of Washington for years to get to put that on my car. Yeah, I can't think of anything. Meanwhile, when I was a kid, I thought vanity plates were the sickest thing could ever do, right?
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, you could just put whatever you want on there. Like, I thought it was like, definitely I was going to have one on my Ford Fiero when I became an adult.
I just moved back to Seattle from San Francisco. And when I was in San Francisco, I had a neighbor that had one that read hot dude.
I tell you,
I stalked that guy trying to find out
if he was hot.
If he was hot.
Did you ever find out?
I did. And when I did, I actually took a secret photo because I had to show like all the other people that had been puzzling about who this person was.
Did he seem hot enough to have a vanity plate that says hot dude?
No, but how hot would you have to be? I mean, that's the hard
I would
thing.
Say Bradley Cooper levels of hotness.
Mm. Yeah, definitely not. I mean, he looked like an average guy.
Wow.
Which made it even bolder
how
in a way.
How interesting. Do you remember what kind of car-ish it was on? Was it like a sports car?
It was a sports car.
Yeah, I feel like that you're never going to see that
on a
PT Cruiser. You're going to see that on something that the car itself is also a statement about the person. I mean, I will say that that's part of like in adulthood why I don't really get vanity plates is because they seem to mostly be a braggy thing that's on a car that is just a rolling brag. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a banana yellow Camaro with hot dude on it. It's like, you're okay. You're gilding the lily here. You're like, we get it. You think you're a hot dude.
I thought, you know, this is always a perennial topic on like talk shows. What are some of the rejected vanity plates? Would you believe me if I told you that the Seattle PI a mere 7 days ago published a slideshow of rejected Washington State?
I would believe it because that's I think a yearly thing, and we've literally gone through this slideshow on TBTL.
Have we? Well, this one is just published a few days ago,
let's
so I don't know if it's
catch
new.
Catch me up.
Yeah, some of them I don't understand, so I might end up like saying something on the radio that is regretful, and I don't know. But the first one looks like it's the number 6 GUN. Sex gun?
No, six gun. Like a six-gun shooter.
Oh, why is that rejected?
Probably because it references violence and weaponry.
This one, you guys might need pens for this. I can hand them out if you need. AXFIXC and the number 8.
Asphyxiate
is correct.
Because it's violence, maybe.
Because it's violent. See, the ones that I don't know, I don't want to say because I don't know if it's really filthy, but I guess I can
Let's
cut
find
it out
together.
Later.
Gus has got to learn these words sometime.
Andrew's got to learn these words sometime. G-O-T-C-U-D-A?
C-U-D-A?
C-U-D-A.
Hmm.
Got C-U-D-A? G-O-T-C-U-D-A?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Got C-U.
Oh, it's probably got you D-A. Is that right?
Got you, DA.
I don't know.
Got see you, DA.
Some listeners like throwing their phone right now. Like, I have no idea what that one would be.
No.
Huh. Oh, yeah. You know what? They have little the PI has written about these underneath. Okay, they don't really know either. It says this could be intended to be slapped on a Plymouth Barracuda, but the Department of Licensing finds this slang word or has a slang meaning or definition. As one PI staffer put it, when in doubt, probably a euphemism for female anatomy.
Well, it does have that, you know, culo or like it's got C-U-L. So that's a if you're talking Spanish, that ends up being not great. But can I also just – can I add a couple that are – like in Kentucky, this is what part of this guy's argument. In Kentucky, they allowed these vanity plates, utter, booger, juicy, weight loss, and F-A-T-A, and then the number 5-5. Write that down. F-A-T-A, and then the number 5-5. Which basically,
I don't want to say it out loud, but yeah, I don't get it.
It basically ends up, yeah, there you go.
Oh, fat ass! I'll say that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, getting very racy.
Oh, nice, nice. Okay, what about ganja? That's one that's been banned by Washington State.
I mean, it's legal, by the way. Why would that be? I mean, I guess probably their argument is it's impaired driving is an issue, and if you have a car that's advocating ganja, then it's...
Seems like a really dumb thing to put on your
car. I mean, I can just imagine. Think about this. Yeah, right? Talk about getting the cops on your case. Imagine just being in your car and being like, I'm just going to drive to work sober today, and then you see a license plate that reads ganja, and you're like, nope.
not today.
Get me some edibles.
Let's see here. BDGBNY. I know one of these I'm going to end up having to beep. BDGBNY, and this will be our last one.
I don't even know. What? Be good, New York?
Yes, you know what? That's what it is. Yeah. Washington State is jealous of New York. I think that's exactly what it is.
Last thing, the reason that the reason this guy won his case is because he wanted I'm God, okay, but in Kentucky, these vanity plates had been approved. God's love, or it's actually G-O-D-L-V-S, God loves, try God, one God, and oddly enough, no God. Those had all been approved.
Really? No God has been approved,
no God
but
was
not
approved.
I'm God.
Not I'm God.
Huh.
Maybe he just still has his $100. Like, yeah, he just, right. Like, couldn't, they couldn't talk him out of it.
Well, he was finally able to pick up his long-awaited plates, and this is his quote to, by the way, Brittany Shamus writing this in the Washington Post. I walked out and showed the people in line, he's talking about the license plate, and I said, you're looking at the world's most famous license plate. That's what he said about his I'm God.
I like this guy, 80 years old, fighting the good fight, yeah. Although it is... It is interesting when people choose these fights. I worry that that isn't like the future for me, right? I get like so wrapped up in these petty grievances. Like, I don't.
Oh,
this
is definitely your future.
Yeah, I don't want to be 80 years old fighting over some dumbass license plate. Can you guys stop me from that?
Mm-hmm.
Here I go once again with the email every week. I hope that it's from a female. Oh man, it's not from a female.
Any emails or V-mails? Got your interest today, Andrew?
Would you be surprised to know that I haven't actually pulled any emails for today? So I'm checking the email folder as we speak. This is how I do my job. Mm-hmm. I don't see anything specifically there. How would you feel about a voicemail roulette?
Yes.
All right.
Hold on. I think I even have my sound effect for that.
Okay.
So tell me when you're ready.
Okay, want me to bring out this music?
I'm going to bring down. I've got no. See, I've got a whole system here, Walsh.
Okay,
you got to leave my sound up because I got to play this.
Where's it going to land? Where's it going to land?
Oh, and there's applause on this too.
And there's applause.
What a sound effect! What a sound effect! Okay.
Okay. Oh boy, we might even need a different sound effect for this one because. It looks like this might be from listener April, who wants to take us to Dream Court.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Hey, guys. This is April in Maine, and I am time banditing and listening to the episode where you talk about the naked cooking in Florida, and I have a butt hut related story for you.
Oh, right. Can you pause it real quick? I just want to remind people that the butt hut is the name of this bar at a nudist resort, and they would call themselves naturists, in Florida that the New York Times wrote about, where one of the big activities is people cooking nude, and they're tired of answering questions about bacon and if it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, and I repeated this story somewhere to somebody, a lot of the people who were interviewed in this piece talked about how they were very shy and did not like dinner parties back when they were wearing clothes, but there was something for them about being nude that just cut through a lot of the weird social anxiety and like small talk, and they felt they were more inclined to go to dinner parties nude than they would have been in their clothes. And again, the bar was called the Butt Hut, and I am probably going to retire there. And Andrew is probably not.
I was thinking about this conversation later because You confided in me, and I think it's okay to say it on the show, that you, like me, are not comfortable going to parties where people make you take their shoes off. But you'd be more comfortable taking off all of your clothes.
Not right now.
See, that seems interesting to
me. Not at 43.
Uh-huh.
The problem with the shoes off is then I'm in my socks, which feels like that feels exposed to me. Like standing around in my socks feels infantilizing.
And it makes me feel very vulnerable, yes.
And also, at this very moment, I would not want to go to a nude resort and cook nude. But I feel like when I'm 75, I am not going to care nearly as much.
Let me ask you a question. Would you consider getting a license plate that says B-U-T-H-U-T?
I already have one.
Okay, good.
I'm just waiting for the Washington State Supreme Court to allow it.
All right, let's go back to April's voicemail here.
And listening to the episode where you talk about the naked cooking in Florida, and I have a butt hut related story for you. And it's a dream court story.
Uh-oh.
So I once had an extremely elaborate dream about living in a commune. I imagined the whole thing with where everybody lived and what everybody looked like. And in this dream, all the people who were in couples had their own little like cottages. And then all the unattached people lived and slept in like a big Quonset hut type building. This is all very detailed. A big Quonset hut type building that had a big sign above the door that said the butt hut. And I remember in my dream that I thought this was horrifying and disgusting. So that's all. Power out.
Wow. Bye. So she dreamt it.
You look like a dream catcher came to life.
Here's what I'm wondering. Was Butt Hut in the listener's brain because of that article we talked
about? I get the impression
that
this came before the article.
Because it's a Quonset hut
and
where there was
nudity. She heard the real life story and said, wow, I dreamed this into existence. I also feel like I wonder what her relationship status was when she had this dream, because it sounds like there might be some couple anxiety there.
Sure, like all the couples get to live in normal houses or whatever and be sort of happy, and then the singles are banished to the butt hut.
Right, exactly. Or I don't want to get into speculation about what happens in the butt hut in dreamland. Maybe it's a fun place for everybody to be.
You know, as long as there's consent.
Yeah.
We had our Gospel Outreach Christian Fellowship church was a real ramshackle building, which I guess still exists in Briar, Washington. But behind that ramshackle building was somehow an even more ramshackle Quonset hut where we would have Sunday school for reasons unknown. And it was so disgusting. It was just like moldy and like weird. And like, I had such negative associations with it because also Sunday school was so boring for me. I hope for our listeners who are Christian, I hope they don't feel like we're just totally going too hard against their particular worldview or belief. Look, believe whatever you want, and whatever is giving you joy in this world, I very much support. But for me as a kid, I dreaded going out to that Quonset hut.
You know, I only knew the word Quonset hut growing up because there was a very small chain of stores in the Cleveland/Canton area that were kind of like, I guess we'd call them sort of like head shops now, although I don't know if they actually sold paraphernalia, but me and my friend Tony would go into these places because it would be where you'd get your hippie ponchos and you'd get
one
all of
little,
your...
like a satchel.
Yes, those really rough...
Somehow University Avenue is still mostly head shops.
Yes,
like, how is that possible in 2020?
Right. And I can still smell it. It would smell like, you know, it's a place
that... Patchouli.
Yeah,
and
it would sell all... Exactly. Yeah. And all kinds of incense.
Is there a more fun place when you're a kid? It was just like... You were just like... You're right. The smell was so kind of, sort of memorable. And just like this feeling of like, there might be some like a sex toy in there. Just like so much stuff in here that's like kind of not okay for me. But like, here we are.
But then it had everything too, because it also was where we'd get our Donovan CDs. They had great, record collection. Like we're living the lifestyle, obviously.
There's a lot of cutting edge music.
Yeah, exactly. So I've always known like Quonset hut always evokes that for me. But what is an actual Quonset hut? Does it have to do with the shape of the building? Is it always...
I think it actually has kind of military implications. I think it's a Yeah, it's basically like that kind of rounded. So the roof is sort of a semicircle.
Okay.
And the sense I have, I'm sure, by the way, that there's a Native American implication or a First Nations implication. In fact, that might even be where the name comes from. But I know that it picked up a lot of steam when the U.S. military started building these Quonset huts like rapidly. Hmm. They go to some place where they're about to fight a war or in the midst of fighting a war. And this is like a way to throw up semi-permanent shelter.
You're absolutely right. And I don't know that it does have Native American roots. It's a Quonset hut is a lightweight prefab structure of corrugated galvanized steel having a semicircular cross-section. Design was developed in the United States based on the Neeson hut introduced by the British during World War One. So it's very specifically
so who was
for
Quonset
military.
And how did he get his name on the Neeson hut?
The name comes from the
Liam Neeson hut. I have a very specific set of skills. And it is building this hut.
It is not having rain get trapped on my roof.
Yeah.
The name comes from the site of their first manufacture at Quonset Point in the Davisville Naval Construction Battalion Center in Rhode Island. So there is a chance that Quonset Point was maybe named after a Native American tribe or something along those lines.
I was watching one of these HGTV-type shows that I tend to. And it was, I think it's called Building Off the Grid. By the way, for the listeners that like go in for that stuff, it's a quality show. HGTV shows are very, or I even can't remember if it's HGTV or one of these other home improving networks, but they're very hit and miss. Some of the shows are just so, they're like an actual home. Some of them are just tacked together and just bullshit. Mm-hmm. And it's so flimsy and you're like, why am I watching this? And some of them are actually well-produced. This Building Off the Grid is a well-produced one, but it was this couple that was building this home out of Quonset huts in Hawaii. And I was like, really? Quonset hut? Didn't you hear about Gospel Outreach Christian Fellowship? Anyway, they were done with it. It was so beautiful. And I was like, that's amazing.
I always thought it was more like a yurt. I always got yurts and Quonset huts confused. But I guess they're very, very different.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what's so interesting about this call is that, you know, it's not a yurt. It's a...
Yes.
It's very specific.
Right. Why did she go with that? In fact, you know, you would think it would be a yurt because yurts, I think, are having a moment, right?
Yeah, they're
lots
having
of
a huge moment.
People are building off the grid or people are like, buy a piece of property and put a yurt up. My sister, Liz, and her husband and their kids, they have a little property they go to. They've got a yurt on there. It's a big deal.
Hey, do you want to chirp about yurts? Sorry, guys. I'm out. I'm out of material. That's all
blurt
I got.
Blurt about yurts.
You want to blurt about yurts?
Is that the name of the show today? Blurt.
It could be. I put
blurting about yurting?
I put let's garb about garbage, but I like blurting about yurting more, I think.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to do it then for today's episode.
I mean, when you nail a landing like that.
Exactly.
You need to
stick the landing and then get out. That's the plan. Katie, thanks for stopping by today.
Thanks for letting me come by. And how great do people, to have you in town, Luke.
How do people find the Bittersweet Life?
Oh, it's everywhere. You get your podcasts. Bittersweet Life, or you can go to thebittersweetlife.net.
And you guys had your 300th episode, I saw. So.
Yeah, I know, which I was really proud of until I saw you guys hit 3,100 yesterday. So.
Well, I mean... if you lower your standards for each episode, you can really crank them out.
Yeah.
I think is the policy around here. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks for listening to the show. We will be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio. I'll be in Portland. If you are looking for something to do in Portland tomorrow night, come by the Alberta Rose Theater for Live Wire. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. We'll see you tomorrow. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.